We take a brief look at the kaiju apocalypse through the eyes of a YA love story this week as we rewind to the ancient past of the pandemic era movie scene for a film that was certainly lost in the shuffle. Can a kaiju romantic comedy work, or will our main protagonist get eaten by an increasingly large number of creatures in this Reacher of a Kaiju feature? Find out along with us. This is Kaiju vs. History, Love and Monsters. Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your hapless and yet hopeful protag, Patrick. And joining me is a giant monster that you have to look into his eyes to see if he's got a soul. Miles. Hey, Miles.
What is up, buddy? How you doing this week?
In the eyes. I'm doing pretty well. Pretty well. It has been some time. This is a movie we're looking at this week that I originally had taken off of our list until I watched it. And I was like, oh, there's tons of kaiju in this movie. Yeah,
there's plenty of kaiju in this one. But it is a little kaiju adjacent because even the giant ones aren't necessarily the focus.
Yeah.
But I was happy to see this one added. This is kind of right up my alley. The YA love story and then mix some monsters into it. Shockingly enough. And I know we'll get into a little bit, but I think we mentioned this when we first started talking about this movie a while back, but this movie is not based on a YA novel.
Yeah, so many are, you know, like the zombie love, the name escapes me, like
Cold, Warm Bodies.
Yeah. That one is actually based on a novel, and there's like a whole bunch of obviously post-apocalyptic kind of romance out there. I'm a huge post-apocalyptic movie fan, and this is definitely more of a post-apocalyptic movie than it is a giant monster movie, but it mixes the two. But just like last week, like I said with Decadence, I was so interested to see that there are multiple kaiju apocalypse films. It's not a universe that gets explored very often. Obviously the Godzilla anime films are that setting in a world thousands of years in the future that has been destroyed by Godzilla and like reshaped by his blood and all kinds of weird stuff. But it's pretty rare. I mean, are there others that I'm forgetting about? I don't think there really are.
I'd have to think, but this one is special. It is co-written by Brian Duffield, who is a writer that I am a big fan of. I think he's going to appear on the podcast twice more with Underwater and the Skull Island animated show.
Oh, we skipped.
Oh, we skipped Underwater?
Yeah.
Oh, that we got to correct that.
Underwater was like, I think, January of 2020, actually.
It was. It was, I think, the last movie or second to last movie I saw in theaters before lockdown.
Oh, so it was right before, huh?
So I very much remember. We might have to correct that one. That's a great movie.
Yeah, but there's like almost no monster in it. It's like
there is a named monster in it. You shut your mouth.
But this movie is all about very interesting looking monsters, I will say. And
yes,
there's a flashback scene that has kaiju sized monsters that are 10 times larger than most anything we've seen, just really massive creatures. And I think they mentioned once we kind of like catch back up to the future that they mostly were destroyed, but like that is, you know, the main thing that absolutely destroyed society is fighting them took so much, and there were so many bombs dropped and things like that.
It's kind of cool because it's like the kaiju were the kind of apocalypse, and that makes it really neat. And it's kind of a Armageddon gone wrong. Like there was an asteroid head towards Earth. The solution ended up creating a worse problem. Mm-hmm. And so when the asteroids fell down, all the chemicals that they tried to use to destroy the asteroid rained upon the Earth. It created, you know, all these mutated creatures.
Yes.
And wiping out most of humanity.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll talk more about the monsters in a bit. Yeah, let's get into the movie. You want to talk about
it? Well, before we do that, we got to ask you, Patrick, what's in a title?
I mean, it's a good title, right? Love and Monsters.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
I would have loved Love and Kaiju or something like that, but that's a harder sell here in the US.
And if there were more actual kaiju in there, I could. Yeah. Like, this is not a Kaiju number 8 situation where, like, you have, like...
Yeah, the largest one we really get to see is probably the crab at the end. And it's still... I mean, it can knock over a building, but it's not nearly large enough for...
It's not
for
Ebra-sized, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's very big. I will say that Love and Monsters as a title works here in the U.S. But the thing is, in the U.S., when we talk about monsters... We're usually very specifically talking about like human sized for the most part, because we're talking about like universal monsters or something like that. And we don't have really another term for giant monsters outside of.
I mean, we just call them creature features mostly. So,
yeah, that's the thing. Creatures also would kind of work, but Love and Creatures does not roll off the tongue.
No, Love and Monsters just sounds good.
In Japan, this movie was called Do Monsatsu, so it was kind of like a English or Japanese English version of the title Love and Monsters. It's so funny because we got a very similar title in Love and Peace a few years prior, but the original working title for this movie was called Monster Problems. What do you think about Monster Problems, Miles?
I don't like it.
It's not as good, right? I mean, I think it is definitely a worse name. And that is, I think, the theatrical release name for some countries. I've written down here Romeo and Kai Juliet. That wouldn't work. But it seems like something if it really wanted to go the YA route, a Romeo and Kai Juliet would be fun. But yeah, I think they probably picked the best of maybe the worst names for this title. And yeah, it is a love story and it is set in a monster apocalypse or a kaiju apocalypse. And that is probably what I got when I saw the trailer originally. But yeah, this movie came out in pandemic time. So I did it have a theatrical or it had a theatrical release of like $50 or something like crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, because I mean, it technically made $1 million at the box office. But yeah, it was essentially released, I think, on like it had a select theatrical release, I think, months after it actually was released on video
later on. But it was on Netflix first, is that right?
I believe the Netflix handled the release internationally.
Oh man, where did I see it originally? I forget, but
I think I watched it originally on Hulu, because this is one of the movies that like I remember seeing the trailer for it. I remember being excited for it because I'm a big fan of this entire cast is excellent. You've got the lead played by Dylan O'Brien, who I have very much been a big fan of. You have Jessica Henwick, who you would recognize from the Iron Fist show or The Matrix Resurrections, or she did a stint on Game of Thrones as well.
Did she? Nah.
Yeah, she was. I think she was one of the attendees to Khaleesi. She played Arya Sand.
No, that was like one of the ladies from the South Kingdom. Then,
oh, was
I
it?
Think. I can't. That's like a plot line they kind of dropped.
Yeah, I remember she like was pretty much dropped, but she's been in a bunch of stuff. She is also in Underwater.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah,
so I think you know you owe Underwater an apology.
Some great. Did you already mention Michael Rooker? Some.
No, I hadn't gotten to him. Michael
cameos.
Rooker. And as well as Ariana Greenblatt, who is, I mean, still very, very young. I think she's only 17, but she's got a lot of charisma on screen. Unfortunately, she, you know, was Tiny Tina in the Borderlands movie, but that's not her fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
This also has a very special cast member.
I think I know who you're going to mention. Yes.
Oh, do you?
Played by two different actors. No, you're not. OK, well, it's a boy, the character boy, right?
No, it's not boy.
I thought you were talking about the dog in the film.
The dog is excellent. And I love that. American boy.
I legit thought the title was going to talk about, you know, finding love in
the animal.
Animal companion, you know, because like so much of the movie is about a saving dog or or boy saving dog. And
I actually really love how it handles the kind of romantic aspect of this movie. I think it does so in a way that, like, I don't think a YA novel would have, because they're always looking for, you know, the next, you know, a series.
Yeah, the main character, you know, we fast forward through a lot of his youth because he's like 21 or so, like when the movie.
Yeah, he's kind of narrating place, kind of so. Zombieland style.
Yeah. Sorry, what is the actor that, or what is the character you're
Dan
talking about?
Dan Ewing, who was the Black Ranger in Power Rangers RPM, my personal favorite season of Power Rangers.
Isn't he the bad guy?
He is. He plays Cap.
Yeah, he plays the dashing captain of a ship who is basically going to steal his girlfriend away from the main character, Joel.
And I think there is another related actor somewhere in here. But I was very, very happy to see my boy Dylan, who kind of gets Red Ranger energy, even though he's the Black Ranger in that show. There's only like four, or no, there's I think five regular Rangers in that show. And I... it's my favorite. So when I saw him, I was like, wait a minute, that guy looks really familiar. And then I saw his name, I was like, no way, where has he been? And so I was happy. Apparently he's been doing like I think New Zealand or Australian soap operas, which, hey, good for him, get paid. And he was also, I think he popped up in something else not too long ago. But yeah, I was very happy to be a Power Rangers alum here. And yeah, Michael Rooker, fantastic. I mean, yeah, this is a very well cast movie. Everyone showed up for work, because this is one of the situations where, like, Michael Rooker kind of plays what I would have put like Jeffrey Dean Morgan in. Like, he plays the charismatic older character,
survivor,
and he just does such a great job. Like, he really showed up. Like, I feel like if his role hadn't been as kinetic on screen as it is, I don't know the movie would have worked as well without him having the right actor playing Ray and Minnow.
They're not in the majority of the movie. It is kind of like a road piece where he meets multiple characters. He meets a robot, has the you know, a whole section with just him and the dog. But it is kind of like a kaiju version of How to Train Your Dragon, because the entire time our main character is making like a survival book in his journal. And you only find out at the end, it's like, oh, this is actually, you know, what is needed to survive is to be able to tell friend from foe as far as the kaiju are concerned in the film. And that,
yeah, and also like, oh, this plant will help you out if you're poisoned or
yes. Yeah, there's it is basically a whole new world. Oh, you know what? You know what film we forgot that basically has a kaiju apocalypse? Is it Monster? Monster is kind of or Monsters, I should say. Right? Yes, didn't Monsters.
Didn't we do that?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying that one is kind of also a kaiju apocalypse.
Right. Sorry. I thought you meant that we didn't do it. I was like,
no. Just kaiju like taking over the world and changing flora and fauna. Mm-hmm. That is basically this movie. While this was being scripted and sent around to studios, was it Brian Duffield? Is that the author?
Yeah, Brian Duffield, yeah.
Pitched this as a post-apocalyptic road movie that fused Mad Max, Zombieland, and John Hughes, a John Hughes love story. And that's a great representation. I feel like if I heard those three things, I'd be like, I want to see that movie. And I don't know why, but yeah, when this came out, I didn't seek it out immediately. I don't think
I knew when it came out, because it came out on VOD first, it was kind of this nebulous time of like, a lot of these things just got lost to the cracks, which is too bad, because
yes,
I think this movie could have done well.
It's really quite good. And I was surprised by that. I guess I didn't expect much from it because I didn't really recognize a ton of the cast at the time. Mm-hmm. I didn't recognize the director or writers as well, but they've obviously gone on to do some more stuff since
then. It's so funny because Michael Matthews, who is the director of this film, and this was his last feature film, did four episodes of the recent 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea show on AMC, Nautilus.
Oh.
He directed the first four episodes, and I have to say, that show is very solid.
Well, great. You mentioned Brian Duffield had also worked on the Skull Island animated series. He was a producer and writer on that. He's also writing and directing a filming of Whalefall, which is, you know, it's based on a book, but is like
it's a Daniel Strauss book, right?
I think so. It's a real time kind of thriller about a scuba diver who is swallowed by a sperm whale, which is like a horrifying thing, but he's like swallowed alive and has to like find a way like 90 out. Minutes
to get out, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So the movie is probably gonna be, it's 127 hours, but an hour but inside of a whale.
And I know the book has gotten like stellar reviews.
Yeah.
And I haven't made myself to it, but the author co-wrote the script with Duffield, so that should be pretty full.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's also just like a giant kind of monster creature feature kind of thing. Those things are absolutely terrifying. Sperm whales, obviously. Moby Dick being the most famous. But
he also wrote and directed one of my favorite movies of 2020, which was Spontaneous, which is based on a YA novel about kids who are spontaneously combusting in school.
Yes. I remember that coming out. This movie has an amazing review on Rotten Tomatoes, 94%, and with a lot of reviews. And I think the audience review is a little below that. I think I have 7.3 out of 10 written here. Metacritic, maybe a little bit lower, 63 out of 100. But that's they weight them in different ways, Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic. Unfortunately, I think they've talked about a potential sequel, but I just don't think, because this movie, you know, when it came out, when it did, it wasn't gonna happen, you know.
Right.
You can't be like, oh, well, the critics loved it, but, you know, it was just another thing kind of thrown into the bonfire of the studios that had no idea how to deal with the pandemic and still released films and try to make money on them.
Yeah, and if this was a book series, I could kind of see it, but I'm pretty happy the way this one ends.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it is a complete story and has a feel-good ending towards the end. Spoiler warning, very feel-good, I would say. And it's one of those movies, I think if you go in not expecting a whole lot, you're definitely going to be surprised, both by the talent and the care with which the script is delivered. I guess, like I said, yeah, my expectations were down and I was very pleasantly surprised. Do you want to get to rating this one, Miles? Do you have a feeling on your personal enjoyment where you landed?
Absolutely. I also want to bring up that the asteroid, and because knowing Brian Duffield's a big old nerd, he named the asteroid Agatha 616. And I'm sorry, that can't be coincidental. I feel like in this day and age, if you use the number 616, you are specifically referencing
Marvel,
comics. Yeah.
Of course. And
we can go ahead and start talking about this one mm-hmm. in terms of our personal ratings. Did you want me to go first?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. I absolutely love this movie. I think it's fantastic. I think the way it's paced is great. They make sure that it's Joel's story, but mm-hmm. Dylan O'Brien is such a charismatic presence on screen. He's so likable that you want to follow him. And at the same time, you're also wondering, is this kid going to get eaten like within a second? Because he is very aloof, especially at the beginning of the movie. The entire supporting cast is excellent. Like we brought up Michael Rooker and Ariana Greenblatt, but Jessica Henwick is very good. I wish she was in this movie more.
Yeah.
I love we didn't talk about him that much, but I love the creature designs. They all look very cool and unique. My only real complaint, which I'll bring that up in the technical. I do have a minor knock against some of the designs, but I like the mature take on, hey, yeah, you have this like very romantic, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed idea, but like realistically, you're in the post-apocalypse and it's been 7 years. Like, you know, time happened, and you know, they handle that very well. They handle the whole like kind of. Some people might not like the anticlimax of the romance, but it certainly shows that there's something still there and could be revisited. But I like the way that they handle this maturely, and like it also shows how much Joel has grown on his adventure. It's pretty, I mean, well-paced movie. It's pretty snappy. I actually would have honestly liked a few more minutes of him kind of on the road by himself. But I'm giving this, for my personal enjoyment, a 9 out of 10. I'm a big fan of this movie.
Yeah, I think, first viewing, this is definitely, it took me by surprise. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. It is, I would say, a great flick. Very solid. Maybe would have been better with one or two kind of beat changes.
Yeah, maybe, I can see that.
Maybe extending the third act, because like like you said, it just feels like Jessica Henwick's character should have been in the movie a little bit more, because
so
much of it is about getting to her. So yeah, just a few changes there, and this would have been even better. But it is enjoyable all the way through, and while it seems like it's a pretty simple plot, it is surprising in a few ways. So yeah, 8 out of 10 means I am prone to watch this movie again, and I think that is the
third time I've watched it. This is one of those movies that people kept telling me, "Hey, this seems like a movie that like is right up your alley." And I was like, "Yeah, I kept meaning to watch it." And then like one day, unrelated to the show, because I think we might have even started the show at this point, I popped it on. And I was like, "Oh man, this is fantastic!" And yeah, so for my personal enjoyment, I'm pretty happy with the movie in terms of just having a good time at the flicks.
Yeah, oftentimes I will be pretty certain what is going to be on our kaiju list and what's not. And this movie was always not on the list until I watched it. I was like, no way, this is totally about, you know, multiple kaiju, but is about living with this kaiju apocalypse, you know? So, and that takes us to the technical. I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 for the technical. I just feel like so many, you know, tumblers fell into place to make this movie succeed. It's very good acting, is very good directing, and I also think the special effects are on point. You know, we didn't talk too much about the monsters themselves, but the comet or whatever it was, the asteroid, did turn everything basically cold-blooded on the planet into a monster. So you're talking about bugs, all bugs. So there's some creepy crawlies, hogs. Yeah, I think a whole bunch of amphibians. And are fish cold-blooded? Does that? I don't think we ever saw fish.
We didn't see fish, but we did see some crabs. And
the crab at the end is the big one. The leeches were radiated. Big size. Yeah, the crab is like the main design towards the end of the film, and has a good amount of character, you know. And they talk a whole bunch about how the eyes are important, and it definitely had kind of a cute but creepy look to it.
Yeah, just like that big snail, the boulder snail.
I feel like they telegraph the true love in the title is the monsters and friends we made along the way. You know, yeah, I mean, I think you realize he's not going to get with her at the end, because, you know, everyone's telling him that.
At least not now.
Yeah.
Because they do kind of showcase, okay, there's still something there, but like she's in a specific place and she has to take care of her colony because she's the leader and he's got to help his own people out. So like, I like the idea that there's clearly something still there, and she has some emotional stuff that she has to work through, which she even told him. And because, I mean, what we take for granted by the end of the movie is that when we see him contact her at the beginning of the movie, that's the first time she's talked to him in 7 years.
Yeah, it's hard to place because there's that time jump, but it is. He's been thinking about her the entire time. And, you know, you find out towards the end that she is not been the same. She's obviously moved on and has gone through a lot of terrible stuff herself. So,
and I love that it's very mature storytelling to kind of showcase all these characters doing different things and feeling different ways. I'm a big fan of that. I'm sorry, did you give a rating?
A 7 out of 10. Maybe very, very good. I think maybe just a little simple, but it's getting high marks because of the actors, the kind of special effects.
I think the special effects are fantastic. The cast is very, very good. The script is pretty crackerjack. Like you, I really would have liked a more meaty third act. Give Jessica Henwick a little bit more to do, maybe a morphing sequence for our good buddy Mr. Ewing, you know, be a Power Ranger. I do like the designs for a lot of the creatures. I loved the big centipede, the toad. Oh,
so creepy.
Yeah. My big complaint with the designs is a lot of the mouths feel a little samey. When you see the close up on the mouth for the crab and for the centipede, they're very, very similar. And I don't know how true life that is, of course, but like at the same time, it just kind of felt like, all right, we had a mouth design, we stuck with it. And it, for whatever reason, when I saw it the second time, it really distracted me.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a very strong film. I do think it has, yes, it does have some a couple of issues with not its pacing, but it does need some more meat on those bones. I think some characters are underserved. I would have liked to have seen more of Clyde and Minnow personally, because they were so great, but I thought they should have been in the movie maybe a little bit longer than they were. But overall, I think it's a very, very solid movie technically. So I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay. What about where it lands on the importance scale as a piece of kaiju art?
So this one's tough because it does feel more kaiju adjacent than anything, even though kaiju is kind of at the heart of the movie. It's the reason for the season. Yep. I do think it's unique because, hey, you have a actual YA love story happening amongst all this monster stuff, and you don't get that a lot in this subgenre that we've seen. And I think that is in of itself very special. I think all the monster stuff is pretty cool. And while it is kind of tangential, I think it is a good one to bring up because especially for American forays into monster movies, you know, outside of like, you know, the recent like legendary stuff, you know, and Cloverfield, we get very hit or miss results. And so it's really refreshing to see a good example of a movie like this that isn't tied to any franchise or prior things. It isn't necessarily really informed by a lot of the kaiju tropes. It's trying to do something a little bit different, maybe more kaiju flavored post-apocalypse than kaiju outright. But I do feel like it's worth bringing up in a conversation. And while it may not have had an impact culturally when it first came out, I know it has been very well loved since. So I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 for its evocative nature.
Okay. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I went back and I, you know, just talking about monsters, looked at my score for the importance of that movie, and you were way, you know, because that was Gareth Edwards, right?
Yeah.
That was his like foray into Godzilla. You scored that as a very high importance. I feel like the same could have been said for this movie if this director had gone on to do Godzilla or something. This feels like a great stepping stone towards a film like that. But yeah, as a kaiju movie itself, though, I feel like this is pretty low on the importance. This is definitely adjacent, but I feel like story-wise, it is, like you said, very interesting, very unique as a setting.
And just and because we don't get anything like it, I just think it's super cool. I initially gave this a 9, but I was like, no, it's not a 9 in its evocative nature. I am pretty happy giving it a 7 just because it is so unique and different, and we don't see that from the genre that much. And for me, that does mean a lot.
I will say, I mean, it is like a big Hollywood movie, and in that respect, it seems like they definitely went out on a limb. Because they usually don't do original kind of IP stuff that's this out there, genre specific. That being said, I'm giving this kind of what I give almost all the kaiju adjacent films, a 5 out of 10 on its importance.
Oh,
I feel like you should watch this if you enjoy post-apocalyptic films, if you like YA romance, like you said. But if you're looking for a kaiju movie, I mean, there's not as much kaiju as you would think. There is some kaiju, but it is more the universe that this takes place in. But yeah, for the most part, you know, they are changed versions of these creatures, but they're just big bugs, frogs, and a very cute, creepy crab at the end. So yeah, but like I said, I'm a huge apocalypse movie fan, so that's why I enjoyed this so much. But I want more about the kaiju itself, more about the monsters. That brings your score to an 8 out of 10, and I'm at a 6.6. Pretty close, I would say. Pretty close in general, but that means our podcast final is a 7 out of 10. Sorry, Miles. Oh, right?
All 7, right, all 10s.
7 is still very good. Very good score.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, judging on the kaiju scale, I'm actually not upset that. That's why I kind of I weighted my personal enjoyment higher because I do really love this movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. I
wanted this to score decently, and 7 out of 10 is not a bad score. It's for its kaiju. If I was just doing a regular movie, this would probably be weighted a little bit higher.
Yeah, I kind of wish instead of a dog, he had befriended a kaiju, you know. It feels like there.
Or it gets revealed that the dog itself is some sort of kaiju.
Yeah, it seems like it's right there. Like a boy and his kaiju should be the sequel. Like he befriends a monster.
I mean, I'm not against that idea, but I'm a huge fan of this movie. It's so much fun.
Oh, right. That is going to do it for us. We did get we got a couple of emails over the last few weeks. Another one from Quentin Houst or Quentin H. Thank you so much for your email. We had some questions about our other TV series we might be doing and suggested a YouTube series, which I think folks can check out on their own. Godzilla, Lord of the Galaxy by Dinomania, which is kind of like a animated, I think, series of kind of Godzilla shorts. I checked it out, and if we did do like a all YouTube episode, that would definitely make the list. But thank you, Quentin, because I had not heard of this before, and I was very surprised. Awesome.
I'm definitely gonna check it out if we don't cover it. And there is some cool. There was someone did like kind of a found footage version utilizing Godzilla footage. That was pretty neat.
Well, there are video games out there that have Godzilla skins, not Roblox, but stuff that's similar to Roblox, where people have created kind of like Monster Island buddies type content with the Godzilla characters. So there's a lot of stuff out there if you're looking for it. But that is our email, kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. Where else can folks find us if they want to reach out, Miles?
You can reach us at our Blue Sky, Kaiju Versus History. Go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show. Comment, share with your friends. Let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju Versus History, to see all reviews and watch our list of films. And if you want to talk to Patrick and I in real time, you can go to our sister podcast website, cosmiccrit.com. Click that Discord button. There is a Kaiju Versus History channel that you can talk to both Patrick and I and all of our fun friends in real time about all your favorite kaiju stuff while we are bored at work. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Yeah, a lot of fun stuff in the Discord this last week, including the potential announcement of a Shin Godzilla sequel.
South Asia Godzilla movie that's separate from
a whole different thing Toho's working on.
It sounds like they want more of a Showa feel. They said they want it more for younger people, so we'll see.
Yeah, and Kawa, who owns the rights to Gamera, is given some information on the manga that is coming out for the 60th anniversary, because time is running out for this year. 2025 is the 60th anniversary, and we've gotten nothing really since the anime series last year, 2 years ago. But yeah, that is going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you, listener. We're going to catch you next time when we are back digging through the bargain bin for more Kaiju Drek, this time in the form of Miles's favorite monkey knockoff in a Kong-like film that is much more explosive than you think, and that is explosive, i.e. like diarrhea. That is right. Tune in next time for History versus Konga TNT.